Hello, young lovers, whoever you are, I hope your troubles are few. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do, say don't cry because I'm alone.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
Of my own. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance.
Joy Schwartz with us. She is the author of The Vision Board, The Secrets to an Extraordinary Life. She's a Hollywood career strategist and a new company and product launch advisor who heads JCOM, an emerging media and entertainment consulting firm in Marina Del Rey, California. Again, she's the best-selling author of The Vision Board, which has sold more than 75,000 copies around the world. And she advises entrepreneurs and business owners to create a business vision board to support their New Year's resolution. Hey, Joyce, welcome back.
Hey, Michael Ray, what a wonderful opportunity to be back with you again. You helped launch this book, you know. And so this has been a wonderful experience, a little bit of a ride here.
Okay, well, let's change the word. This has been a wonderful vision.
Thank you. This has been a great vision come true.
No, absolutely. Let's go back, and then for those who haven't heard, the vision board. What is the vision board?
Vision board is basically a collage of pictures that you put together. Can be images that you tear from magazines, very simply, and you put them and arrange them in a design that becomes a visual map to where you want to go in life. Kind of your visual GPS system, but you've got to do a little more than just cut and paste the pictures, though.
You know, I've said for many, many years, you know, Joyce, I've been a bodybuilder for probably 50 years now, and I am no Schwarzenegger. I mean, there's no question about that. On steroids, I couldn't be like this guy. And if I went into a gym and there were pictures of this man all over the wall, I would set myself up for failure because I know I couldn't achieve that. So if I went into another place and I saw pictures on the wall of guys that have a build like I could achieve, now all of a sudden I'm in, I buy. Now, my sister, I guess it was about, 3 weeks ago, she's losing weight and she's looking good, but she's got this vision of what she thinks she wants to look like. And I said, really? I said, go pick some pictures out of women who have bodies that you think you could get yours like, that you would like. And if you walk into where she's at, right over the desk, there's all of these pictures of what she could be like. And so effectively, it's not just imaging something in your mind, it's creating it where you can look at it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I call that a vision body, where you can actually put your head on the top of somebody's body, you know, and have somebody Photoshop it a little bit, and then you can see what the future holds. And what you are creating, and that's part of it. I've worked with Lori Donnelly, Miss Fitness America, and I've worked with a couple of other fitness models, and they all say the same thing, is that, you know, you want to be the best that you can be, but you may never be, you know, as you say, you know, Schwarzenegger's a different man for a different time.
No, absolutely. Now, I've seen him lately. I'll bet he wishes he had my body.
But could he be. He's had a little challenges this year.
A few challenges, to say the least. But going beyond that, realistically, you have to have some kind of an image. You have to have some kind of an end result of what you want to do. Otherwise, Joyce, you can never get there.
Right, right. Actually, I've got a good Schwarzenegger quote I'm going to pull up here. Vision creates faith, and faith creates willpower. And, you know, that story of the mustard seed, all you need is a little bit of faith and the size of the mustard seed, and you grow this giant tree. And there's been a lot of symbols throughout our world, throughout biblical symbols and whatever. And what amazes me is vision boards are now being used by people of all different faiths around the world. We've got Pentecostal people using them, Methodist, Unitarians. I've got, since we first talked, Michael Ray, I've got about 150 vision board coaches around the world, from South Africa to China to the Mideast. And they're all helping people to live their visions.
Now, by the way, as far as Schwarzenegger goes, and I want to make a point of this because it's very true. This man had a vision when he was, and he's one of those very few people who lived what he said he was going to do. He came out of, Austria, and he said he was going to become a champion bodybuilder. Then he said he was going to get in politics. And everything he said he was going to do, that man mastered it.
Mm-hmm.
But he had the vision.
Absolutely. And he is a marvel in terms of that. And that is, you know, those people that it's amazing how many people do have visions. And we've used that. If you go to some of the great men and great women of the world and just do a search for a vision, you'll find that in their speeches around the world. And we're finding more and more celebrities and obviously inspirational authors, but regular, ordinary people who have a passion for something, like you do with the bodybuilding, or I'm looking out at Marina Del Rey with the yachts, and actual visioning it. And one of the things that I talk about in my GRAB success formula, starting with gratitude and ending with sharing, is you've got to be able to receive from the beginning and then release those thoughts that you're not able to receive, or you don't deserve it, because you do. You certainly do. As a child of God, you deserve it. And the idea of believing. And if you can't believe, I suggest you do what you walk into a movie theater, is you suspend your disbelief. And this is an important part of the vision board book, to be ready to receive and to just go for it.
You know, by the way, when you talk about the movies and letting go, we go into a movie, we stare at a blank screen, and based on what they say, how they say it, and the way they do it, they're creating actions of us. We're in love, we're frightened, we're angry, we're whatever. And in that time, you've released everything, and you are who that person in the movie is, or you're going through whatever it is that they've gone through. If you recognize it, if it's a familiar scenario to you. So letting go is as easy as you said, walking into a movie, because when you're there and you're living what they've got to offer, nothing in your life really matters at that point.
Right. And, you know, the thing that I often explain to people is, if I took my 13-year-old nephew, Josh, and I said, before we walked in the movie, and I say to Josh, you know, Josh, this is Avatar. This is a movie. It's really not real, blah, blah, blah. He would take his popcorn and throw it at me and say, Aunt Joyce, I know, please, shut up, it's a movie, let me enjoy it. And that's what most of us don't do, is we don't enjoy the journey to the destination, you know, and the journey is the destination. And that's one of the challenges with living your vision, is that most people stop themselves 5 feet from the goal.
Well, I would venture to guess also, let's add something to that, 98% of the people out there, all of us, don't have a vision. And if you don't have the vision
that's
to start
right.
with, How are you going to create it? How are you going to be it?
You're absolutely right, Michael Ray. And one of the things when we do in our Vision Board Boot Camp is we have one going on now for 11 weeks and takes you all the way through from giving your accomplishments for 2011 and then moving into what's your vision. But we find that about 80% of the people have got about 40 people in the boot camp, and about 80% of them come in and say, well, I don't really have a vision. I don't have a dream. I've been thinking I want to make more money, and we don't. Most of the time, they don't even know the why of it. And so the why becomes a really important part of your vision. Why do you want to do this? Why did you want to be a bodybuilder, Michael?
Oh, and loud and clear, I have no idea. I started when I was about, let me see, we're not going to do the math here. I've been over 40 years, and I probably started when I was 50 years, and I probably started when I was 18, 19 years old. And it just happened, and it became a habit with me. And so no matter what I've done over the years, four or five times a week, I'll work out.
So right, for me, right. And so you enjoy it, obviously. And it became something that did become a ritual. And that's the other thing, is that when we look at these people that achieve their visions, they find that they're doing it maybe at first in baby steps, or I'll call it little actions, but then it becomes truly a ritual, or a thing that they do over and over and over, and it becomes a success pattern. And this carries over into your life. Don't you find that the bodybuilding carries over into your great radio show, too? Is that you just don't stop, right? You keep going.
Well, what it's called discipline. And if we do the math, and if you figure 50 years bodybuilding and starting out when I was about 19 years old, makes me about 46.
Right.
I said, I've been
pretty cool. I mean, you know, when you look at it, corporations have vision statements. Here's Nike's, which I truly love, to bring inspiration and innovation to every athlete in the world. And then, parenthetically, if you have a body, you are an athlete.
That's
a great vision statement.
And the other side of that is, somebody said once on the show, was a psychic, and they asked that psychic, they said, he said, most people ask him, you know, what happens when I die? And his response has always been, what happens when you begin to live?
Truly, truly. Beginning to live and to live every day, and I say is to get as close proximity as possible as you can to that vision, to that dream. And if you can begin to sort it out, and that's what we do with some of the exercises that we have, is to, in the book, in the vision board book, there are some quick exercises. We even have one called Pick Three, where you can pick three things in your room. You want to try it now, Michael?
Yeah, go ahead. Let's take the
shot. Okay, good. Pick three things around the studio very quickly. Kind of just something that strikes you, kind of just jumps out at you. I'm going to pick, I've got a crystal clock I'm looking at. What else? What do you have?
Oh, I've got a
screen.
Oh, good. I've got a screen in front of me.
Okay, what else?
Okay, there's a microphone and a headset.
Okay.
And there is a treadmill.
Treadmill, interesting. Okay. And so if we would say, what does the treadmill mean to you?
Treadmill, the treadmill
kind of symbolizes.
Yeah, symbolic. I got it. I'm a treadmill. What am I? I'm something to keep me in condition. I'm something to allow me to breathe. I'm something that allows me to move through the day without needing oxygen.
Right. So you're moving.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're moving forward, right? Because a treadmill seldom goes backwards.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're moving forward, and then you've got the microphone and the headphones, which allows you to do or symbolizes what?
To speak and to listen, to express, to communicate.
Right, speak and listen, right. Okay, and then what was the screen?
The screen is something that you can visualize everything that we've talked about. You can communicate, you can speak, you can listen with the headphones, but the screen takes it to a dimension of adding, quote-unquote, vision to it.
Right, right. And so what you are is moving forward with your own vision, right?
Absolutely.
And there you are, living your vision. So we just take some of those power words that you came up with. And so you're moving forward, you're speaking and listening, and you're, of course, seeing. So if we look at where you're going in 2012, it looks like you're moving forward maybe with a treadmill even faster than ever before.
By the way,
let me
add this also to it. Looking at the screen, now if you want to symbolize it just a little more.
Sure.
In today's world, when I work with people all the time, and all of a sudden I found something on the computer, which was a camera and a video. And now I can talk to people in all over the world, and it's as if I'm sitting with them right in my own office, and we can see each other, talk to each other in real time.
So you've got state of the art. You've
Absolutely.
Got something that's going, that you're moving in 2012 technologically in an advanced way of moving forward.
Yeah, and emotionally,
and
I'm still 17. Wait, and emotionally...
Oh, well, that's all right. That's all right. That adds that sense of youth, that sense of fun, and joie de vivre that we all need in life, right? And that's what
Absolutely.
You've got.
John Wayne and the fun.
And so there, you know, it's as simple as that. Picking some things that you have around you, looking at what they symbolize to you, because that's what's important, and then seeing what they could bring. And it was that little deeper look, as you did, at the screen. Taking a second look and thinking, okay, what it really brought was the idea of this interactivity. and the able to personalize your message in some ways to some people. And so it becomes, what, technologically state-of-the-art? That's a cool way to go and enter 2012 and move forward. And as you say, you know, I think what you do, you know, extraordinary is the power of really listening.
And by the way, there's a difference between listening and hearing. And you get to a point mm-hmm. when you've talked to enough people, you begin to hear.
Right.
Yeah, no question.
No,
let's go back to the vision book for a moment. Let's go all the way back for you when you first connected with it. Where was it that the light bulb turned on for you and you said, "Oh, look at this"? And then beyond that, what you realized you could do with it. What happened? Where did it start for you?
Now, this is really a cute story because I have used a variation of vision board in my career consulting with a lot of Hollywood celebrities, a lot of people you'd see on TV, and producers and directors and people at the big studios and all of that. And as I said, some people that I can talk about, like Candy Leitner and when she was leaving MAD and developing her own new career and Miss Fitness America and even Mr. Universe I've worked with. But I hadn't really thought about it as something to bring into my emerging technology practice and, you know, in terms of working with, I was the one that worked with the company that did created the Xbox Kinect. You are the controller. And so I brought them to the marketplace. And I realized that one of the things that they all did was have something visual to show, whether it was a demo video or whether it was pictures of things in progress. And, about 4 years ago in January, I was taken to the hospital with a stomach problem and thought I was going to have an operation, got away and got out of it. And I was sitting home a couple weeks later watching Oprah. And then a guest you had on last night, without even knowing, became very influential that. Lisa Nichols showed up on the Oprah show with her vision board, and she showed it. I went, you know what? I've been using the same kind of thing since 1986. I wonder if there's a book about this. As I was watching the show, and I've got the blog to prove it, I blogged this at my blog, visionboard.info, about my discovery of this thought, and I immediately went to the Internet, and as I was blogging the Oprah show, heaven knows why I was blogging, and I felt it was very important to do, and I had just seen The Secret a few days before. Long story short, I did not see that there was a book out there. I put together a proposal, got a hold of an agent, and 6 months later, we sold the book for $100,000. So an amazing, you know, I just knew it was the right time and the right place for explaining this to ordinary people who may not have had that idea of a vision or the idea that they could even deserve a vision or live a better life because they've been, you know, broken down or the economy's got them or whatever.
Well, Joyce, let me ask you this. We're starting to run out of time, but I think very important. How to become a vision board coach, because it's gone to a point where you've trained people to train people, and it's viral. It's going all over the world right now. So how does somebody...
it really is. We've got them from Lebanon to South Africa, and go over to visionboardinstitute.com and we'll get you in on a free info class. And you can find out, you're going to take an 8-week course via home study or live with me. I still teach the classes myself. And we will show you everything from what Michael Ray's been talking about is visioning and how to use the pictures and how to understand the symbols. And we go into mythology and we go American Indian symbols or Native American symbols, and we go into the colors. We didn't even ask you the colors of some of the things in your studio that would have an impact. This impacts our life. And so what's really cool about it is how you interpret it, and that gives you an idea of really how to interpret the images and pictures that you surround yourself with, not just on your board. Most of us have pictures on our refrigerator. We've got pictures in our houses. We've got pictures all over, and then we've got images imploding us all over, and then we've got the audio images that come up. And I can say, keep your antenna up, especially if you're listening to radio, because there's no doubt that today Michael said some really great words about, you know, following your vision. And, you know, you will find that if you keep yourself at the right frequency of, you know, really positive talk, you'll be able to walk that talk. And that's why we do with the vision board coaches around the world. And they've got people all over. We've even got vision cards that they use now so that you don't even have to cut things out of a magazine.
Ah, Joyce, I love having you on. Again, one more time, please, with the website.
Okay, the website, the best website to go to is visionboardinstitute.com. And, of course, on Twitter, I just tweeted that we were going to be on, Michael. And it's at visionboard, just that little at symbol, visionboard. I got it in there very fast and got the at visionboard. The book is still available in 6,000 bookstores, and you can get it on Amazon.com. And this week, it's at bargain price of $7.55, which certainly can't pay for the printing. Plus, it's available on Kindle, iPad, and Nook. So if you're going digital, there it is.
Hear you loud and clear. Hey, thanks. We're going to have you on soon.
Thanks so much, Michael. Thanks for sharing the vision. Have a great New Year.
Just be only names to you and me. I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see. There are so many simply incredible places to see. When I think of the warm Caribbean, I see a new world for you and me. I'd give anything just to have one single day there. And once we get there, I know that we'll stay there. Stay in those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London, Siam, Siena, Vienna, Verona, Java, Jamaica, Bombay, Barcelona. Show me those fabulous places we're longing to see.
Philip Chappell with us. He is he serves as managing principal and chief investment officer. After a highly successful career with Smith Barney and later Tribune Financial, where he was one of the company's top producing advisors. In addition, Phil has a long history of success in the areas of business development, marketing, and consulting. He's very passionate about his work with clients as chief investment officer, specializing in asset management strategies, insurance planning, and taxation issues. And let's say, Phil, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be with you.
Oh, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Chapa, yeah, you did great.
Got it. Okay.
one of the few radio hosts that do, so congratulations.
Thanks. Now, by the way, one of the most important things that I want to address tonight is basically the middle class. You know, we get a tremendous amount of information, Phil. We get it from both sides of the aisle. We have people with agendas. We have people with ideologies. They're shoving down everybody's throat. The news confuses everybody. And it seems in the end result, the middle class seems to be dwindling away. Do you see it that way?
I do. And in fact, if you've read some recent articles, as I'm sure you have, one of the issues that we have is that one of two Americans in our country today would be considered living in poverty. Now, what does that mean? If you break it down, it means a family of four earning $45,000 or less is considered in a poverty state. And now, I live in the state of Connecticut, and I know you have listeners around the world. There are certain areas where $45,000 a year might be able to be acceptable for you. But, you know, where I live in Fairfield County, Connecticut, where my business partner lives in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, these are not areas where you can make $45,000 a year and live for a family of four. So it's forcing, because of unemployment and underemployment, which is a new phenomenon in our country, it's forcing people into the poverty level. And instead of having a middle class, what we have now is the upper, higher class of socioeconomic individuals. And then we have a very lower middle class, which leads into the poverty class. That whole strip of what has been middle America is disappearing right before our eyes.
No, absolutely. I'm penciling a couple of things out here. If you take $45,000 and maybe 25% of that, let's just say 20, and that's low for taxes, that's $9,000. And if you take $1,500 a month for rent, or if you've got a mortgage, which is not a lot of money, now you got $18,000 there. You got $27,000 there, and less than $20,000 to operate yourself, your family with food and health insurance and everything else. You're right. $45,000 today is nothing.
Exactly. And obviously they need to revisit and raise what the poverty level is, because, 10 years ago when they did this last poverty study, $45,000 did go further, but, in 2011, now moving into 2012, that's just a very unrealistic number.
Oh, by the way, Phil, I remember, we won't tell anybody about this, but I remember when gasoline was 18 cents a gallon. So,
Michael, I do too, so.
We'll keep it our secret.
Yeah, really. And, it's interesting because the variables with gas, I see it myself as I travel around, but it's becoming a huge issue because you really find people, and this is a side note, but driving into other states to buy gas that's cheaper and then driving back home. And you wonder, where the wisdom might be in that, unless you live right on the border of a state. But, this is how desperate people have become.
And I think the big battle where we get caught between is the culture that's being taken away that we live in. We live in a particular culture. You and I got brought up in an area where, you were proud to be an American. You said the Pledge of Allegiance and on and on and on. You celebrated Christmas and everything was wonderful. Well, we don't live in that world anymore.
Right.
And for many of us, we get totally and completely confused about it. And then we get confused about, quote unquote, what's an American. Now, Phil, if you have that kind of confusion, how are you not going to be confused about income and what's going to happen tomorrow and 2 months or 4 years from now? I think that in and of itself is one of the major problems that we have in this country today. We've lost our identity.
Well, you are so on target. I couldn't agree with you more. We actually live in a state of paralyzation, and that's brought about by fear politics and fear economics. I mean, right now, people sit home, watch what Wall Street's doing. Is it going to go up? Is it going to go down? For the past 5 years, Michael, it's only moved sideways. This market has done nothing remarkable one way or the other. And then you always have what's going on the political scene, and I'm not a political commentator, but it does tie into economy. So what I can say is you have them, keeping people constantly in fear. I mean, at the 11th hour today, we finally had the payroll tax cut deal struck between the Senate and the House and something that President Obama will sign. Now we're going to go into the entire anxiety of what happens with unemployment benefits after December 31st. Are they going to tie that into this bill? Are they going to separate it and perhaps 2 million people will lose unemployment benefits as of January 1st, and then they'll rush back into session in January to restore it? I mean, why do we have to live like that? Why are we putting people out there? That's not the America that you and I grew up in. And a lot of people say, well, it's these new ethnic groups. They've changed it. They're the ones who are destroying what we had. No, we're a country of immigrants. These new ethnic groups are new variables for the economy. We should be using the strength of the new ethnic groups and stop making people afraid of them.
No, absolutely.
Because that's
no.
Hurting us economically.
Now, by the way, a couple of things that you're talking about here, and I think the average person gets totally confused with this. The Republicans hate the Democrats hate the Republicans, and on and on. This payroll cut tax deal was as simple as this. The Democrats wanted it to extend for 2 months only and then stop. The Republicans wanted to extend it for a year. It was the same tax deal. Didn't matter. Take it to the next step. You're talking about 2 million people not being able to collect unemployment. That's the best thing that could happen for the administration. Why? Because if 2 million people can't collect unemployment, they fall out of the numbers, out of the role of the unemployed, because they're not collecting, they don't get counted. And now we have more people working than not working.
Exactly. And that's what they do, is it looks good on paper, but in reality, we know people are suffering. The other
sure.
thing, you know, we look at unemployment numbers, and you know this as well as I do. What's the first problem? Migrant workers aren't counted. They're unemployed right now. We're in the winter. But worse than that, those who do not pay into the unemployment systems in their state, which are most small business owners, sole proprietors, et cetera. I'm one of them. You know, I'm an owner of a financial services firm with my partner, but something happens to our firm, we're not covered by unemployment. There are estimations that probably right now, instead of 13 million people unemployed, Michael, there could be 25 million, but only 13 are counted. The flaw in how we count unemployment is the first thing we need to fix.
Now, by the way, I'm going to throw something out at you that I'm looking at here, and this is the thought that struck me. You know, you served, you know, for many, many years as a Roman Catholic priest. Now you're in, and hear this out, now you're in the financial investment business, and I think that's kind of interesting because if you can, you know, obviously you were there, you were representing God. But going into the financial strategies business, what you're doing is you're strategizing for people to make sure that they don't fall down financially with this untrackable market we're in now. And if you do the job you're doing, you're blessing them. So one way or the other, you're still doing the job.
Absolutely. You know, I still see what I do very much pastoral work. You know, when I left active ministry, I didn't leave the church. I didn't leave my feelings behind. I really, you know, you carry your priesthood always, even though, you know, I've been laicized and I'm married and have moved on. But, you know, I am who I am. My partner, Dan Faringer in Pennsylvania, he was a therapist. So we are about helping people. It's really, I always say, it's not what's in my wallet. It's really what's in your wallet. Because if I'm doing my job, I'm making a living, but you are too. And, you know, you're making out better than you might with somebody else who's going to charge higher fees. So I really see this as an extension of who I am as a person. And obviously I had to be retooled and retrained, and, you know, that's not always an easy thing. I mean, I'm 54, so 10 years ago when I left at 44, you know, the brain doesn't work as well as it used to. It was easier to study at 20.
No, I got it loud and clear. But the point of contention is that you're there making sure that people can at least be satisfied to know that whatever happens, they've got a kind of a hold on their financial stability. And it's come down to, I don't even know why this happens, but it's come down to money. Period. End. That's it. Everything
right.
is about money right now. Politics is about money. Love is about money. It's almost at a point now. Well, my goodness, I think we've got so off focus and off track that if something doesn't happen pretty soon, we're not even going to have a memory of who we used to be.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is we have not properly helped people with their risk management. You know, we maintain a separate organization, but we work very closely with one of the most highly regarded insurance firms in the country, the McNamee Group out of Westchester, Pennsylvania. And we actually have a joint partnership together. And what we're finding is people have not insured themselves. We have people dying who did not have appropriate life insurance. We have people disabled who don't have any disability insurance. We have people without health insurance, which we know is a huge red flag topic right now.
Sure.
And what happens, you know, as I was talking with Steve McNamee the other day, the president of the company and one of the leading experts in his field, is that we've got a whole group of people that are going to collapse financially because they never took care of the risk in their lives, you know, let alone the assets they may have. You don't have that foundation of risk management, Michael. You know as well as I do, it's going to be a disaster, and that's what's happening.
By the way, look what happened, quote unquote, to the government. Forget who's in office or who's been in office. If it would have been handled properly and if we'd have had the foundation, none of these things would be happening today, except we didn't have the foundation that you're talking about getting every individual to have. The country didn't have it.
Exactly. You know, we don't understand what it is our history has taught us. We as Americans have a very short memory. If you went today and asked people, tell me the top 10 news stories of 2011, they'd have to think about it. And I'll bet you they'd first come out with things that happened in the last 30 days, because some of the other stories, you know, are lost in their minds. So we don't have the history in our collective consciousness. And because of that, not only have we forgotten who we are, but we haven't laid the proper foundation. We are always reactive. We're not proactive. And it's so true in our economics. Everything you see on Wall Street is a knee-jerk reaction. You see nothing but emotion going into it. You see nothing but positioning. Look at the Wall Street protesters. I personally think they have it right. I think more people should be out there protesting, and I think you're going to see a proliferation of it. You know why? Wait till the bonuses are handed out tomorrow, and then they're made public in a week or so. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to be getting an $8 million bonus.
No. But here's the problem with the protesters. Yes, we should protest, that we have the right to protest. It's part of your job as an American citizen to protest. But know what you're protesting about. That's really where the key is. Don't break the laws that you're saying that other people are breaking and not paying attention to, yada, yada. So if you're going to protest, you're going to get that kind of strength. Imagine what would happen if everybody was geared up and going in the same direction with all the protesters that are out there now. But we're focused. They knew exactly what it was they were protesting about. Phil, I hate to say this, 90% of them out there have no idea what they're doing. I've listened. I've watched them interview. But they're protesting. Good. But it doesn't get you anywhere.
You're right. And I think if they had leadership that could lead them in the right direction, this protest would have much more potency than it does right now. And I think that is what's lacking. And I agree. You know, there's that anonymous factor that if somebody's protesting something, somebody jumps in, they don't know what they're doing. We certainly have those people out there doing that. But somebody in there's a core consciousness amongst those people that something's wrong. Now, if somebody can just show them why they might be right, it would be helpful. All they know is something's wrong. They're watching and they're listening and they're hearing. What it's doing is it's creating anger that's not being directed properly. Peaceful protesting, which for the most part they've tried to do. I mean, there are clashes with the police, and that's going to happen. But the reality is the emotion behind it has got to have, as you say, some kind of intellect, and it's missing. You're right.
Yeah, it's got to be controlled also. Feces on a cop car doesn't work. The breaking up businesses and breaking windows doesn't work. Rape doesn't work. I mean, this list goes on. And you're spot on. If there would have been someone who could direct them with some kind of a core message, that's the problem. They don't have a core message. I listened to one of the kids, and it's not fair to just say one said this and everybody's like that. So I'm going in saying that's not fair. But he was asked, you know, why are you here? Well, it's corporations. I can't get a job. The corporations. Well, if the corporations offered you a job, would you take the job? Oh, no. Why not? Because they're a corporation. What do you do with that?
Right, exactly. You know, you can't cut off your nose to spite your face. And you have to realize that businesses, major businesses, big corporations, what we consider blue chip stock companies, have been the backbone of this country. I think where the frustration has come in is that they have not been as responsive to the economy that we think they should have been. In other words, they're in it for themselves. They forget the person that's the consumer, or they forget the person that is, you know, providing the service that, you know, that needs the service that they're providing. Excuse me, but one of the problems that's happening is, you know, I do a lot of insurance work. I even see that with insurance carriers today. You know, you try and get somebody insured. I'm not so sure the insurance carriers, some of them, really remember why they're in business.
Why, when
these mutual fund companies that are out there, you know, some of them are still very speculative. They have no business putting offerings out until they get themselves much stronger. And, you know, folks are buying this stuff. And, you know, I'm just shaking my head saying, what are we doing? We're disserving people. Not miss, but disserving them. A lack of service completely.
And, well, you got to love this. We got to close it off. We're running out of time. 1962. Of course, that was 20 years before I was born. 1962, I had my first job, and it was for Washington National Life Insurance Company, and it was in South Central Los Angeles, and I was on a debit, and I was collecting house to house 50, 75 cents for health insurance.
Isn't that amazing? My dad was an old MetLife agent, and he used to go around and collect dimes from people for their life insurance policy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you think of those days gone by, and, you know, obviously our GDP has grown, our economy has grown, so things are more expensive. But we just there just doesn't seem to be the same understanding of what you're buying or the same understanding of what you're getting. I can't believe how many people have policies out there or how many people are in annuities or invested. Michael, they don't have a clue. That didn't go on 40 years ago. People knew. You know, they might not have had a lot, but they knew what they had. Why have we let that go on by? And I think we, as the American people, have to take responsibility for that.
And let me give an example of what you just said, that we do have to go. But my mom bought a life insurance policy from me, $10,000 worth, years and years and years ago, around in the early 60s. Well, she passed away in 1983. So when my brother went to collect the insurance, they gave him $10,000, but he said she's been paying for it all these years, and she's paid way more into the policy than $10,000. And they said, the face value of the policy is what you get. I was in the business, and I opened my eyes, and I realized that you don't always get what you think you're going to get, because we don't know to ask, and the people that – and I sold it to her. yeah. And what are you going to say? Do you have a website we can find you at?
Yes, I'm at Arbol, A-R-B-O-L, ArbolFinancialStrategies.com. And you can also find our partner at the McNamee Group, MacNamee Group.com.
Wonderful. Hey, Phil, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
It's been my pleasure. I hope you and your listeners have a wonderful holiday season.
Take care. Wait. I happen to be Jewish, and listen to this very closely. Merry Christmas, and I mean that from my heart.
And happy Hanukkah to you.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Michael.
And the only heart I own for you and you alone. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore. Oh, that's all. Oh, that's all. Say it's me that you adore. Yeah, it's me that you adore. For now and evermore. That's all.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Monique Guild with us. Monique, I hope I said that right.
You did. It's Guild. A lot of people say Guild, but it's pronounced Guild. You did it perfectly.
How's that? That was intuitive. Okay, it's Business Intuitive that can change your business future through her intuitive guidance, remote viewing, and forecast of the future. She's got the ability to listen closely, to unlock the mysteries of your business and your career life, thereby prospering. And she's no nonsense, cut to the chase. That's her style, and she's able to see where a business is blocked and able to provide insights that pinpoint the blocks that prevent people from living up to their highest business potential. Monique, hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. It's a pleasure to be on air with you. It's fantastic.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah, we got off to that start. Everything else has got to be good from here on. Monique, let me ask you this. When we're dealing with an intuitive, let's define what an intuitive is, and we'll touch on remote viewing, et cetera, and a forecast. But intuitive, is that something that everyone has inside of them that they don't know how to unlock? Or is that something that somebody's either born with or that spark happens and you've got it and you don't even know why you have it, but you got it?
Well, two things. Number one, I was born with it. My dad's a doctor, and he can have a patient walk in the door. He's actually a psychiatrist, and he can tell you everything about that person before they utter a word. And my grandmother was the same way. So, yes, I was born with it, but we all have instincts. And, you know, that feeling you get when you're walking down the street and somebody's walking towards you and they don't feel quite so right, you cross the street. We all have different ways that our intuition speaks through to us, whether it's through our gut instincts or, for me, what happens is I get a film, if you will, that runs in my mind, and I follow the pictures, and I get blocks of information, and I'm just able to know things of a person's past in their business, which caused them to get stuck on an atomic level, atomic molecular level. Everything I teach is based in science, based in physics and quantum physics and things like that. So the only kind of woo-woo thing about me really is I just get this blocks of information about people and their businesses and also the future, where it's capable of going.
I think the only woo-woo thing in the world today is what's gone on in this country and what's gone on over the world.
Yeah.
So woo-woo has taken on a whole different definition. And by the way, I really believe that you know, people like yourself who have the gifts that you have, if you sit down with people and realistically, and if they allow themselves to open up to you, the world just happens. Let's talk about remote viewing for a moment. What is that?
Remote viewing is when you're able to see into a situation. You're able to see into I'll give you an example. That's the best way for me to explain it.
Sure.
Do you remember years ago when the sniper in Virginia and Washington was running around and nobody could figure out who
Absolutely.
He was? And he was, remember that whole thing? It was pretty intense. And I just happened to be home that week. I had had surgery, and I really am not a big news watcher, but I started watching the case and following it, and everybody thought he was a white guy. He was in his, you know, like a typical sniper profile of this person, and I was following it for a few days, and in the middle of the night, it was I went to sleep on a Wednesday night, woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning on Thursday morning, and I got a block of information. And I was able to see into, to know that he was not white. He was African-American. I knew that he had worked for some sort of security service or something. I knew that he had the name Allen in his name. And I was able to see into the future of who the future self or person was going to be that they were going to catch. And sure enough, I just went back to sleep. I didn't think anything about it. Went back to sleep, and that next morning I woke up and was brushing my teeth, and I remember, oh, my God, I got that information in the middle of the night, and I went to my computer, and sure enough, on the home page of MSN was a picture of an African-American man. It said John Allen Mohammed, that he had worked for the military service and that he had been fired. And, you know, I'm able to see when I focus in. I've helped even one of my clients, her son was missing, and this is not something I do normally. But she was such a close client of mine, and I can see when I focus in on something particular, I was able to help, you know, I knew it was really bad. He ended up being murdered, and I knew that that had happened, and I knew that she needed to get the detectives involved, and I'm able to go into places or situations without actually ever having seen it. I kind of have a look around, if you will, into the situation and to know what's going on. So a lot of times the government uses people to remote view and, like, let's say to see, let's just, for example, if they were going to see Saddam Hussein's office and what's in his office, a lot of people can go into that office without ever being there and just really focus in on it and see how he has things set up strategically and that sort of thing.
Now, it's the White House. They're trying to get me. Okay.
Or maybe me. I better be careful.
I would have to wear my tinfoil so the rays didn't get to me. Now, okay, let me ask you this. Now, very important now. Most people have no idea how to do it. And then again, too, on an individual level, it gets a little scary for them. But it's a little easier if they can create the workshop. And I know the Removing the Obstacle to Your Success workshops you're doing. How does somebody get involved in that? What's the first step that we get into during the workshop?
Okay, yeah. So at the Conscious Life Expo coming up in February at the LAX Hilton, if anybody goes to the Conscious Life Expo website, that's going to be on Sunday morning. I believe they've got me scheduled for 10, and it's going to be a 90-minute workshop where this is a workshop I've taught for the last 12 years to corporations. I've taught it privately, you know, and over the phone and every, you name it, I've taught it. And actually, it's based on what my book is based on. And what's going to happen there that on that Sunday morning is we're going to start identifying obstacles like grief, resentment, negative thinking that prevent us from hearing how our intuition is speaking to us. And I'm going to really teach people how to set intuitive goals, their soul's purpose goals, identify how their intuition is speaking to them, and begin to heal some of the blocks. So it's going to be like a mini version of my 8-week workshop that I teach. And it should be a really, it's been a very successful workshop. So I want to impart and teach as much as I can on that Sunday morning. So I'd love to have people join us.
Okay, now let me ask you this. You said a word that I didn't realize. Do you have a book involved with this?
I'm just finished my book proposal, and then I've decided to go ahead and finish the book. And yes, a book is in process right now. I'm going to have that done here soon. And then it's going to be set up in a way where people are going to be able to teach the workshop amongst themselves. And they can either study it as a workbook individually or teach it kind of like the artist way was, how the artist way was set up, and people were able to put together workshops and things like that. And I'm also going to start training people to do what it is that I do, and as well as teach workshops and things like that.
Okay, so let's start with the book, and then we'll move forward. The book is going to come out when, about 2 months?
No, I would love to say it's going to be out in about 2 months, probably more towards the middle of the year.
Okay, so summertime. Okay,
yeah.
By the way, you and I have a date. Summertime, when the book comes out, we have to have you come back. Okay, so we got summertime.
That would be great. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, so we have the book. Okay, and also it ties to the workshop. Now, I can find out about the workshops. Where can I do that? Through your website?
Yep. So the intuitive goal workshop that I teach by teleconference, the 8-week workshop, yes, you can find that out by my website. And if someone happens to be in Los Angeles the weekend, it's Valentine's Day weekend on that Sunday in February, I will be teaching a mini version of that workshop. I think they're just charging $20 for people to come and learn what I'll be teaching on that Sunday morning. And that's going to be a 90-minute version of the overall 8 weeks that I teach.
Okay, and then the next step would be if somebody wanted to learn to teach it themselves, then you basically will teach the teachers.
Well, yeah, so if someone, so just to kind of put it succinctly, if someone wanted to just take the workshop with me, the 8-week workshop, they can go to my website, which would be Monique Guild, spelled like Guild, GUILD.com. They can see when the next workshop, 8-week workshop starts. Then if they want to have an experience, a mini, M-I-N-I, version of the workshop, they can come to the Conscious Life Expo Valentine's Day weekend. Then if they eventually want to, once the book comes out and they'd like to become a trainer, train what it is, it'll be the Monique Guild Institute, I will be teaching people how to do actually what it is I do for a living as a business intuitive, as well as teaching people how to facilitate a workshop.
Okay, so in essence, all of the things that you can't do, you'll have other people doing it. So the word will get spread. More people will become influenced by it, so they can let go of some of those things that hold them back. One question before we go, because we're starting to run out of time. I have found that whether it be personal, whether it be business, whatever the case may be, those obstacles that stop the success, I have found that they're internal. They're not external. And what we do right. is we externalize those things, and they come up for us, but in we have the total control to get rid of them, because if it's coming from us, we can control it.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm so fortunate. I get to work with a lot of really large global people that are involved with huge global causes. And it doesn't matter if I'm working with a diplomat, a foreign leader, it doesn't matter, or an individual who doesn't know what they're doing in their lives for business. It's always an internal. It's a personal step that gets the business staff blocked. And absolutely, if it's inside you, it can absolutely be changed and used towards a benefit.
Wonderful. Monique, thank you so much. And by the way, one more time, please, with your website.
Yeah, it's MoniqueGuild.com.
Monique Guild, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Michael. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay, good night.
Bye-bye.
For you and you alone. That's all. That's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime, and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love whose burning light will warm the winter night. That's all. That's all. There are those, I am sure, who have told you they would give you the world for a toy. All I have are these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you adore, for now and evermore. That's all. That's all.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You're listening to Thought Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark.
Yeah, it's me that you adore. For now and evermore. That's all.
Ronald Scott with us. He is the author of Mitt Romney, An Inside Look at the Man and His Politics. Ron wrote for People, Time, Life, Sports, Illustrated, Money. His work and appeared in USA Today, Seattle Post, Intelligencer, and the Boston Globe, Salt Lake Tribune, Philadelphia Inquirer. And he was one of the first to raise the flip-flopping issue in 2005 when Romney changed positions on abortion and on gay rights. Ron, hi, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, hey, by the way, thank you so much for being here. You know, we see Mitt Romney constantly. Are we seeing what and who he is, or are we seeing something that he wants us to see as opposed to who he really is? I think I said that backwards, but I think we got the gist of it.
Well, that's the $64,000 or $64 million yeah. question. I don't think we're seeing all that he is, and he is. I think the campaign has gone on a deliberate strategy to not say a heck of a lot at this particular point in time, and are saving the reveal, as it were,
yeah.
For the general election. So we're no, not seeing as much of him as we'd like.
Well, when we take a look at this, you know, whether it be Gingrich, Romney, whoever is running right now. With the shots they're taking, they're diluting. And when that one person, whoever that is, runs against Obama, is that going to have an effect on them of what's going on back and forth with these guys are saying about each other?
Well, I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Democrat either. But that is the danger of a primary election: is that you expose so much of who you are, who the opponent is, that whoever is the eventual winner, that they have to run against everything that's been said about them in the primary and in the general election, and that comes back to haunt them at that point. Actually, this time around, the Republicans have been pretty good about not attacking each other. That's changed a little bit in the past few weeks as Gingrich's fortunes have risen to the top to some extent. But it's not been bad. So there probably won't be as much spillover into the general election this time around as there was, say, in 2008.
Yeah, let me qualify where I am so we can take a look at this thing and really get to the heart of it. I learned a long time ago that there's something called a Republican, there's something called a Democrat. And I'm a middle-of-the-road Republican, but I'm not an extreme conservative. I have friends who are Democrats that they're not extreme progressives. And I think what we see in the media and those people running for office and the ideologies that we come up against are those that are to the extreme, and they're not really mirroring what that average person is out there that is a Republican or a Democrat. I think what we're really seeing is ideologies and philosophies that have run amok. I mean, you know, we're taking a look at things now, and we're saying that who do we want to run the country? Where do we want the country to go? And is it too late to get the country back to a semblance of what it was and who we were and the culture we came from?
Well, in reverse order of your questions, the answer to your last question is I think it is possible to get back to where we need to be to gain some kind of semblance of stability and goodwill and so forth. I've often used the analogy with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. If you painted a center line down the middle of the highway and you looked at the two candidates, you'd see Mitt Romney hugging to the center line on the right side of the line and Barack Obama hugging to the center line on the left, but not too far apart in reality. That kind of thing does not play well for somebody like Romney in the primary election season, because there are ideologues that want him to be really fiercely clear about abortion, for instance, or same-sex marriage, or healthcare, and they're kind of one issue voters, and the kind of candidate that's going to prevail in the general election obviously is not going to be a one issue candidate. He's got to appeal to people across the board. So it's an interesting challenge that a Republican faces this time around, where you have to deal with so many extremes. And appease them all and say, well, I may not be able to go the full 100 yards with you on this particular issue, but I can go 75 yards or 50 yards, and I can go on another issue, I can go with you 75 yards, and another issue 60 yards. And at the end of the day, if you calculate, add up all those things, am I good enough to get your vote in the primary so I can become the candidate that's going to unseat President Obama in November? And I think for some people, the answer is he'll never be able to please single-issue candidates because he's not going to be as strong on abortion or same-sex marriage as they are, and they're going to go with whomever they will choose. And in a sense, it will be kind of a wasted vote because that person is not going to be able to win in November.
No, absolutely. And I think the biggest problem that we have today is the single-issued voters out there. If we could find somebody who could work with the economy, fix the economy, do things that were necessary to allow us to get back to a semblance of where we were, it would be great. But if somebody is against abortion, that does not necessarily mean that they don't have the wherewithal and the ability and the heart to go ahead and recreate what we needed to recreate in this country. So when we're looking at single issues, I don't know how we got off on that, not you and I tonight, but just as a country, it hurts us.
It does. And in Mitt's case, and I'm no advocate for Mitt, but in Mitt's case, he's in this interesting situation where he has been opposed to abortion all of his life. In every situation where he's run for office, he's been opposed to abortion personally. But he's taken the position that in Massachusetts, where people want the right to choose, that people ought to have the right to choose. That's a constitutional kind of thing. So he said, okay, I can support Roe v. Wade and support the premises of that, and I can allow people to make the decision they want with regard to abortion, and essentially, in his mind, make the wrong decision, because he fiercely believes that elective abortion is really not a good thing to do. But people who are really doctrinaire about the abortion issue say that that's really a flawed position on his part, that he ought to be imposing his personal view on the rest of the electorate. And I think his view on abortion has become more conservative over the years. But I think his basic fundamental belief is that I'll uphold the Constitution, and if the Constitution and the Supreme Court allow certain things to exist in the country, I'm obliged as President of the United States or as any elected official to uphold the law. And that's the way it is. And if you don't believe that, if you're not a constitutionalist and don't believe in the Constitution, then you've got a beef with me. But if you don't, if you believe in the Constitution, then you have no beef with Mitt Romney,
Ron,
or Barack Obama, for that matter.
I think the biggest problem we have today, the analogy would be, and you couldn't do this today, but go back years ago. Your kid walks into the room and you say, tell me the truth. And the kid tells you the truth and you whack him. Okay. So what does the kid learn? Well, if I tell the truth, I'm going to get hurt. And what do we have today? We're seeing the same thing with our political figures. If they tell us the truth, if they tell us what they really think, quote unquote, they're going to get whacked and they're not going to get the vote that they want to get. There's where the problem is. And as far as,
Romney, if they don't tell us the truth, if they tell us what we want to hear,
yeah,
and they go from one kid to the next kid, then they get that label that I unfortunately used on Mitt back in 2005 of being a flip-flopper. And the answer to the question is a politician, the kid has to please all these different parents, and if he's going to say things that will partially appeal to one parent and another parent and so on and so forth, then he runs the risk of being called indecisive and not committed,
yes,
and really a plastic man and so on and so forth.
And that's what we get. You know, my feeling is, and it's not going to happen, but my feeling is, in my heart of hearts, if you say tell the truth and they tell the truth, respect them for whatever it is that they say and how they feel. At least you know what you have. You know, and as far as him, with the Mormon background, where his religion would tie into his presidency, I really can't see that. We are talking about a constitution that has to be upheld, a constitution that is very thin right now because it's being changed, a country that is fighting for a solid definition of what the culture is supposed to be about and who we are and what we stand for. We need somebody to get into office that's tough and is not going to take anything and clean things up the way they should be cleaned up. We've got a lot of problems here in this country, and we've got to a point where everybody's frightened to say something because they might insult someone. And if you insult someone, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a whatever the case may be, and the list goes on. They also have that. So it's very hard to be able to listen to someone who is in the middle of a speech, in the campaigning for themselves, to say, is this how you really feel? Because what we do know, if you're old enough and if you've been around long enough, you realize you're not going to walk in and do this, this, that in politics. There's something called consensus. And without consensus, you can't do anything today.
Well, that should be apparent in the way Congress has behaved for the last couple of years, that nothing has happened because Congress has had such a difficult time reaching consensus. And you're right. That this nation has been great because we've been able to reach consensus on most issues. And
sure,
we're going through a period now where things are so doctrinaire and so partisan that we're in a sense shooting ourselves in the foot.
Big time! Now let me ask you this. Let me take this right down to the core. Ron, should I vote for this man?
I think he's a good man, a really good man, and I think he's ethical. I think he's moral. I think he's got a backbone. I think he knows how to lead. He knows how to cut to the chase. He knows how he knows how to listen. And everybody I've talked to in doing the book has said those things. Even people who say, well, he sometimes exaggerates, takes more credit for things that he's accomplished than what he really has accomplished. Even people who are critical of him in one area say, well, but he knows how to do these kinds of things. I think probably the same thing could be said of President Obama as well. So I'm not making a comparison between the two of them. I'm making a comparison to is he a good man? Is he worthy of a vote? Can he stand on his own 2 feet? Is there a character there? And on every count, the answer is yes, there is.
But does he stand out from the crowd, Ron? Does he stand out from everybody else running for that particular the candidacy spot?
Well, I think I'm trying to be a reporter here and be nonpartisan. And I'm actually more liberal than Mitt is politically. Yeah. But in the context of the Republican primary, clearly he is the stronger of all the candidates there by a long shot. And he's had the experience, he's had the background in business and government and in the public sector as well when he ran the Olympics to do the job properly to be a credible candidate in November. So in that context, he is the stronger of all the Republican candidates. And I don't think there really is a close second. Gingrich probably is a close second.
Yeah.
But there are so much baggage there that I don't see that as being a viable situation.
As a projection, because you are liberal, do you think, and I'm asking the question, that doesn't mean I'm going to come up with some kind of the opposite side of the table for you, but do you think Obama has a chance of getting back in?
Do I think Obama has a chance of getting back in?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And I think that the election in November will be really close. It will be a dead heat. If it's between Romney and Obama, it will be intellectually stimulating because they are so close together and their backgrounds are so similar and they're decent, honorable, don't hit below the belt kinds of people. The debate we'll have between now and November will really be interesting and productive for the country.
Yeah, I'm seeing some interesting things. I heard a stat this morning, which was interesting because Obama's starting to pick up in the polls now. And right about, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 months before the 2008 election, Hillary Clinton was like, what was she, 21 points over? No, maybe it was 18 points over him at the time. And he came from behind and he took it. So what we're looking at with polls now really don't mean anything. I think it's going to be right up to the last minute that people will begin to have an idea of what's going to go on and where the country's heading. I think Romney is going to be more of a conservative. Gingrich would be a little more of a conservative than Romney. But Romney in and of himself would make a good president. It's a flip of the coin to see which one would stand up the better against Obama.
Well, I'm partisan in that regard.
Sure.
But I'm partisan because I've been watching the polls for the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And if you'll recall, and maybe actually you won't recall because you weren't, there's no reason why anybody would be following the polls in 2009, but I was because I planned to do the Romney book back then, so I knew that he was going to go again and I wanted to make sure I was prepared. But back in July of 2009, this is now 6 months after President Obama took office, and the first Rasmussen poll came out in 2009 in July, and it had Romney beating Obama 6 months into the Obama administration. And those numbers more or less have held true every single time they've done a head-to-head matchup nationally ever since then. That's pretty unusual. I don't recall, and I could be wrong about this, but I don't recall a candidate sustaining that kind of a lead for as long as he has. And yet people have, on the Republican side have gone up and down past him in the last 6 months. There's been a flavor of the month kind of situation going on.
Sure.
But his numbers against Obama have remained very constant.
Yeah.
And the numbers, the comparative numbers of other candidates on the Republican side have not been as promising as Romney's numbers.
I think the one thing only that's going to beat Obama is the economy. If the economy really dumps, he's going to be in big trouble.
That's the consensus opinion. The economy is, if it breaks Romney's way, or the Republicans' way, that they will have the election.
Yeah. No, it got a lot of
so far, it's been a little bit of this and a little bit of that so far, and some good things for Obama and some good things for the Republicans. So we'll see how it plays out in the next 6 months, 8 months.
Oh, absolutely. Ron, we're starting
12 months, excuse me.
Website we can find you at and find the book.
Yes. www.ronaldbscott.com, I think, gets you to it.
Wonderful. Hey, Ron, thanks so much for joining us. I think it's going to be interesting. Right before the election, we should have you back on and we could see what happens here.
Happy to come back.
Okay,
thanks
great.
For having
hey,
me.
Hey, Ron Scott,
much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
You may even miss me, baby. Gonna feel lonely and want me only, 'cause you know, honey, you always got your way. Say, baby, if you really want me, you're wrong. Yeah, you know it's gonna grieve me. Yeah, I'm gonna miss your bony little daddy. Comes a one of these. It's some of these days I do it so quick. You're gonna miss me, honey. And I'm talking about days when you feel all blue. You're gonna miss my hugging. You're gonna miss my kissing. You may even miss me, baby. For you need me, you know it's gonna grieve me. You're missing your brown-eyed daddy. Grab it now, some of these days.
Welcome back. I'm Michael Ray. You are listening to Thought-Provoking Talk on Dresser After Dark. Dr. Lewis Torrey with us. We're going to talk about 2012 Universal World and personal predictions. Even George Norrie confirmed many, many times on Coast to Coast, including in his public appearances, that Lewis Torrey is the top guest predictor gifted with an uncanny accuracy for world events and natural disasters. Just to mention a few, 9/11 New York terrorist attack, the Asia tsunami, Hurricane Katrina, the India terrorist attack, including the U.S. economy, corporate dilemma, and all major earthquakes were fully predicted. And Dr. Torrey, for an interesting presentation on 2012, well, that's what we're going to talk about. And I got it. Lewis, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, when we really come down to it and we talk about predictions, 2012 is going to be a real interesting one, because right after the presidential election is when the prediction of the end of the world is supposed to come in December. So a month after the election is when the prediction has been around for many, many, many years. This is going to be a very interesting year for all of us. What do you see in this year?
Well, basically, as far as the year 2012 is concerned, Michael, do not expect anything more than what happened after the Y2K dilemma or the year 2012 predictions. This is due to the current dragon tail located in the 12th house, which is regulating the subconscious of the United States and affecting people that created this universal dementia, something that I predicted about a year and a half ago in my books. And this is why you have people like camping, proclaiming the end of the world a couple times already, as pretty much what will happen after the year 2012. So what will change is people's perceptions of those that they should trust and those who are just jerks. So it's like kind of a wake-up call offered to humanity as far as prediction is concerned. Again, you have to remember that I based all my predictions of Nostradamus' work and the location of the dragon, which is not something that modern astrologers or all the people, I call them, apocalyptic or talking head or conspiracy talking head, all these people do not have cosmic consciousness, so they let their fears, their imagination, which is often uncontrolled, speak for them. So rest assured, 2012 is actually a blessing for humanity, a golden door offered to people to raise their cosmic consciousness, at the same time keep critical thinking at a good level.
Now, by the way, when we talk about the end of the world as we know it, it's a consciousness that can't end. It's just like you said, Lois, it can turn to something phenomenally wonderful, and it could be the end of the world as we know it. Consciously, and I think that's where the confusion is. If you take it literally, it sounds like it's going to explode and everybody's going to die and that's the end of it. But if you take it symbolically, if you take it metaphysically, then all of a sudden it's a completely different definition that we would end up with, because the end of the world as we know it can be a completely different change in the way that we see the world and the way that we live our lives.
Exactly. Basically, knowing that 99.09% of the people walking this earth are not directly related to Einstein or are deprived of cosmic consciousness, imagination, conspiracy, and religious dogmatic teaching is all the material they have to deal with. And I've been battling this since I can't remember. And this is why I choose the day after, or December 22nd, 2012, to celebrate the Dr. Turing's values in real predictions and real cosmic consciousness. But in many ways, you still have to remember that in all this, humanity has a very deep and karmic lesson to learn, which means knowing the future is the reincarnation of the thoughts. A lot of people, a lot of those talking heads are manipulating, again, unconsciously, the supraconscious in time and space, which is responsible for your personal fate and our fate as a whole, and what's ahead for humanity. So this is why I'm constantly, and God thanks I have enough people following me, to counteract feeding evil on a daily basis with all these nonsensical shows and dysfunctional reality shows. It's all based about making money and using your fears in order to generate a few bucks. There's nothing to value. There is nothing to believe in this. There is nothing absolutely worth it to listen to, but he does make money for the producers and for the actors who are all deprived of cosmic consciousness.
No, but let's take it a step farther. You mentioned the word unconsciousness, and a lot of your lectures have, the power of the subconscious mind when you're dealing with, hypnotherapy, as a matter of fact, and Kabbalistic healing therapy. When you deal with hypnotherapy, you're dealing with the unconscious mind. We as a collective consciousness has a conscious and an unconscious mind. And it's the unconscious mind that is open and receptive to all of these message units coming in that you're talking about with the reality shows and the rest of it. We don't even realize the effect that it's having on us because it's subtle. It's underneath the awareness level of every person out there. They know exactly what they're doing, how to phrase the words, the images, and all that they do to drive you into a particular direction. I would imagine with hypnotherapy, you could bring down the level of receptiveness, sensitivity to these messages that are coming in. If I know how to fight it, then I'm good. There's an old adage, Lewis, you can't take a knife to a gunfight. You got to know what you're doing to be able to stop what's coming in at you.
Exactly. I mean, you put it in a way that I couldn't even say better than that. The fact of the matter is, it's all about education. Ignorance is evil. Knowledge is power. And I do not expect much of your listeners to be clinical hypnotherapists, but I'm expecting them to have what you call common sense. And the sad reality is that when you control someone's source of information, you end up controlling that person's entire life, including his wallet. And again, I am here as a true light worker, trying to make people aware that if you want to trust someone's predictive work, make sure to trace his past. And as far as I'm concerned, I challenge any one of your listeners to find anyone that, like I do, posts his predictions, dated, printed, published, and announced in all major media, like I do. Once you do find somebody who's putting actually the green in his mouth, like I do, then you want to trust this source of information. As far as I'm concerned, I'm here to help people to hold on to their head high, not to fall for evil, not to misuse the superconscious in time and space, and to realize that they were not put on this earth to end up a drastic, dramatic end. Scientists nowadays are just fresh out of college. They are kids. I call them the new kids on the block. They do not have cosmic consciousness. They have been educated traditionally, and all they have is their books, which is as good as the Bible or any archaic material which has no value, which is based upon imagination, fear, and manipulation at the core. So keep positive, because all that you heard about in the year 2012 as far as destruction and the end of the world is just bull. Instead, go ahead.
Okay, let me go back to the hypnotherapy for a moment. Isn't it all suggestive ideas? Isn't it all placed in the subconscious mind of the people, the base population, and they're not even aware that it's happening? You know, you put your conscious mind over here, and if I can feed everything into that unconscious mind, you're going to move and respond in the direction that I want you to move in and respond. And I think the biggest problem that we're having, and why your work is so important right now, the biggest problem that we're having is and I'll say this 1,000 times a day, we are losing identity. The culture is being diluted. And people are confused. They don't know who they are here anymore. They don't even know what an American is anymore. And with all of these message units coming in and the control that's being put on everybody, you have to have some way to be able to block it. If you know how to block it, you can move through. And when 2012 comes, you can move through with a consciousness and an awareness that will bring you to every place that you're talking about. But if you don't have the tools to stop what's coming in, you're not going to get there.
Exactly, but you need to remember, it's like a chess game. You've got to have the element in place. And as of last March 2011, the elements are all in place. And when I say element, I'm talking about the location of the dragon. And when I use the dragon, for the lack of words, it's an energy coming from the constellation of Draco, like an energy coming from the moon that creates the tide or creates the word lunatic, moody, and crabby. The tail of the dragon is currently in the 12th house of the United States, which regulates the subconscious. In other words, anybody living in the United States, more than anyone in the world or other country will have the similar the stars as the United States, will be very receptive, will be affected by this dragon in the subconscious. And when the dragon is in the subconscious, it produces very deep psychological changes and tremendous fears where imagination and logic disappear. This is why David Icke, which is from England, makes most of his money and his fame from the United States, because the stars and doors is feeding of fears to a population which is unconscious. And what that do, of course, is to produce more stress, more insecurity, more disturbance that we do not need. If you're unhappy with your government, there is nobody else to blame but yourself and all the voters at large, because all the voters that are unconscious put people in power that don't have the right UCI. to lead UCI, of course, to stand for unique celestial identity. Not having cosmic consciousness, the German elected Hitler, and see what happened with the German population and the world at large by offering a chance to a leader who doesn't have the right stance to lead other people. So it's all a matter of education. It's all a matter of cosmic consciousness. And I'm working overtime trying to bring that rationality, that education to the masses. And slowly but surely, I'm making an impact.
Okay, but when we go back to Hitler during the Second World War, I'm going to come up with this word again, identity. What he did is he took a country that had a diluted culture, absolutely no identity, that was confused financially. It's the same reactions that you're talking about that's going on right here, coming from a cosmic metaphor, and he gave those people identity. Put the brown shirt on, put your band on, and now you have identity, you have a purpose. What we're lacking in this country right now is purpose. Lois, that's what we're lacking. That's what diluted everything. We have no specific purpose. If we can get on track, then all of a sudden everything turns around.
Indeed, indeed. But, you know, the fact of the matter is America is still a very, I'm afraid to say the word, but a very racist country. The fact of the matter, only when President Obama will be removed from office, is the universal energy of faith will be reinstated. They have lost completely faith on this government, completely faith of its president, and for good reason, some people may say. But at the same time, as I said, once Obama gets out of power, and once the new towers in New York, the Freedom Towers, start to become operational, this is when the true rebirth of America will take place. Until then, we all have to struggle and deal with it.
Now, by the way, let's use the word you said a moment ago, the racism. Let's talk about the dragon. Now, until you said it, this is the first time I've heard the analogy about the dragon and the consciousness in the country. But let's talk about that dragon. The dragon has to have the dragon has got. Let me play with this. The dragon has got to have outlets, and those outlets that the dragon has can come from political entities, religious entities, and so on and so forth. So if the dragon's power is that, the dragon has to manifest what it has to project onto this planet through the presidents, through the leaders, through the religious leaders. So in essence, is it really a country where there's prejudice, or is it really a manifest of what the dragon is creating to get the division going for the confusion?
It's a mixture of absolutely everything, put it this way. The dragon is an energy, for the lack of word, we could use Pluto. Pluto is the farthest and the smallest planet in our solar system, brought down to a dwarf planet by astronomers who have a dwarf brain. So what I'm trying to tell you, while this planet is very small and very far away, it happens to be the most powerful planet you can get. It is a planet to regulate life and death, rebirthing, and it's currently in the sign of Capricorn that rules politics, government, that rules power itself, and this is why you have a constant battle between those that are in power and those that are not, who wants to change the power in the name of freedom and humanitarianism. So there are no accidents, just circumstances taking place above your head by a planet's energy or dragon, for that matter, that are not yet understood or used by science or humanity at large.
By the way, Lewis, we're starting to run out of time. I have a question. Where did you get your hypnotherapy training at?
I got it from the Phoenix Institute right here. And I got my doctorate from the Light Institute in Sacramento, California, which is recognized by the Board of California. But much of my teaching came from the hand-on experiences. And who knows that one day I was going to be teaching psychiatrists, psychologists, FBI agents, doctors, attorneys, and God knows what, who is who in America. Again, there is a big difference between education and intelligence, and there are no schools that produce Einstein.
You know, I think where the step is, you can get all the academics in the world, but as you just said, I'll say it in a different way, it's going out there and practically use it that gives you the wisdom to deal with it. You cannot learn wisdom in academia. You learn wisdom putting all that information to use. And that was just a question that, as far as the hypnotherapy goes. By the way, do you have a website we can find you, follow you, get information, and move forward?
Yeah, well, you can go to my name, drturi.com, and if you Google it, it goes by the million nowadays. So I start to have a voice all over the world, which is real good, as I can counteract the forces of evil. I was all constantly asking people if they are taking care of their body by not stuffing themselves with hamburgers and fattening product in order to avoid a heart attack or high blood pressure, they can do it. But when it comes to the world of the spirit, it's going to be a very different situation because with so much dysfunctional TV shows and what's going on the radio, they are poisoning the not only the body but also the spirit. And this is why you have to apply your will. The part of God in each one of us is much stronger than the stars or the dragon or Pluto or God knows what. But if you do not have cosmic consciousness, all you're going to do is to behave neurotically, enact and act your stars. You're going to be a robot of your stars. And this is why it's so very important to reintroduce the old science of astrology or astropsychology back into our college universities and accept it as a solid discipline.
Wonderful. Now, we got to go, but I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciated you being here.
My pleasure, my friend. We'll do it again sometime, anytime, okay?
Absolutely. Good night.
You have a good night.
I've been in love like you. You be brave, young lovers, and follow your star. Brave and faithful and true. And cling very close to each other tonight. I've been in love like you. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You fly down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet, not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say don't cry because I'm alone. All my good wishes go with you tonight. I have had a love of my own. And I know how it feels to have wings on your heels and to fly down the street in a trance. You wing down that street on the chance that you'll meet, and you meet, not by chance. Don't cry, young lovers, whatever you do. Say don't cry because I'm alone. All of my memories are happy tonight. I have had a love of my own. Hallelujah! I've had a love of my own like yours. I have had a love of my own.
There are so many fabulous faraway places to see, such as Mexico, Sweden, Hawaii, Japan, and Capri. There's so many exciting and wonderful places, mountains and jungles and desert oases. Pleasant as home is, it isn't what Rome is, so why stay there when there are so many fabulous faraway places to see? Why should Spain and Tahiti and Rio just be only names to you and me? I feel certain there's people we'd be glad to know there. So tell me, why don't we get up and just go there? Go to those fabulous places where we long to be. Like Bangkok, Hong Kong, Paris and Venice, Tokyo and Cairo and Lisbon and London. Wonderful, fabulous places we're longing to see.
Kim Summers Eggleston with us is a life coach and inspirational speaker and the author of Getting Your Life to a 10+. She specializes in helping people get every area of their lives to a 10+ and teaches them to get rid of stress, anger, disempowering emotions, limited beliefs and thoughts. And she's given lifestyle advice to people for over 7 years and is certified in neuro-linguistic programming. Pranic. I can't say that, Kim. Is that pranic?
Pranic.
Chronic Healing, I knew that. I just wanted to make sure we had it. And also specializes in goal dream clarity, oracle card readings, and imagination methodology and guided meditation. I got through it. But boy, we're going to have a great interview after that.
Yes. Well, thank you. I'm so excited to be on air, and I'm extra motivated after hearing that great music.
Wonderful. By the way, and thanks for being here. We have people run through life today, especially in this world where there's so much confusion politically, economically, culturally. Most people have no idea which way to go, and it's affecting their homes, their families, their businesses. When we deal with people today, is there an overarching theme, a problem, when you've dealt with people that they've come in for, or you've taught, or you reach through the book? Is there an overarching theme that it seems to be constant with everybody, the problem?
Yeah, the most common thing that I tend to see, and I would say in general, I mean, it kind of goes through many ages, but I would say generally it happens between 35 and 55 or 60, that suddenly people reach a point, even as young as 35 sometimes, where they go, wow, I think I was living for what my parents wanted me to do, or what my husband or wife or children wanted me to do, and they realized they were never doing what they truly wanted to do in their heart. And I hear it constantly. And so people are looking for what makes them not just happy, but fulfilled.
Okay, so effectively, they're looking for themselves, and for the most part, they haven't found themselves. We're all ourselves. We're all the best we can possibly be. But sometimes we hide it, because if I step outside of myself, somebody might hurt me.
Exactly, exactly. And so I think that through working on oneself, it's been proven that you get closer and closer to fulfillment and to really, truly finding your passion and living it.
Now, by the way, when you deal with people, when they first come in, will they believe for the most part that you can find your passion, you can live this great life, you can do all of these things, you know, love, empowerment, and enjoy yourself? Is that something believable for most people in front? How do we have to present it to them where it can be something that's manageable?
I think that's where my gift lies, is that I don't go with a lot of theory. I actually do a lot of speaking events, writing, and coaching, where I give them tips, tools, and techniques they can use right away, like an immediate language change, an immediate exercise where they can shift out of old beliefs, things like that, where they can actually apply it. And I teach it in a really down-to-earth way, so they can say, wow, this doesn't sound too out there for me. I actually get this, and I actually can do it.
Okay, so in essence, it's done in such a way that when somebody sees it, they realize that it's not beyond the realm of possibility for them to actually do this. Now, the getting your life to a 10+, are we graded? If I walked in, could you grade me at a 3, a 5, a 7, or a 10? Would I know where I'm at when I come in and realize where I have to go to get to that 10+?
Well, yes. Most of the time, people will rate themselves. They'll know what areas they need strength. I give them different quizzes and questionnaires and talk to them and help them along. But usually people know the areas they need help in. And we work. I always tell people, don't look at everything all at once, because at that, you get kind of overwhelmed and say, forget it. Instead, pick a few things and work on them step by step, a little bit by bit, day by day. And you can really get yourself up there. And I also specialize in really teaching people how to live in their full positive power and exude confidence. Because when you have that and you work on certain characteristics about yourself, it's much easier for everything else to just flow and start working out positively.
Okay, let me ask you this. Let's go back with you personally. Where was it in your life that you saw that this needed to be? Did it happen to you first? Did you get to fall down, be able to see it, realize what it was to do to fix it, and then bring it forth to others? Where was it for you that this started?
It's very interesting, because I got the chance to see Jim Rohn speak. He's one of the greatest inspirational speakers. Actually, he even taught Tony Robbins, and he's taught a lot of the greats. And I got to see him at only age 18. And so that kind of started my journey of studying personal development. But because I was so young, I had several times in my life where I did fall. And instead of just giving up, I've always been one to study more and figure out what happened? You know, why did I act this way? Why did I behave this way? Instead of staying stuck in guilt or frustration, I've always been one to, you know, talk to somebody or read something to try to get out of it and learn. And I think times in my life, like, for example, at a young age, I had a very great, perfect childhood, but I still ended up in an abusive relationship at a very young age. And instead of letting that become a pattern, I figured out the reason that I had put myself through that was I was trying to fix the person. I was trying to help them, which was my project at the time, which is very silly now, you know, but I was young. And it helped me in that it made me not judgmental to anyone. It made me be able to help others. So I think that was one of the pivotal points.
Okay, so now with others, when you deal with it and when you work with it, most of us have problems that don't come, you know, the problems that we have, somebody models a particular behavior, but we've accepted that behavior. We've accepted who we think we should be or what we don't think we should have. How easy is it to drop that? That stuff inside me that says, I don't deserve that. I'm not good enough to do that. They're never going to like me, and so I'm going to sabotage it before it happens, and then I get to prove myself right about it. How do you move through that? You know, there's so many people stuck with that today.
Different ways. There's powerful NLP exercises that can actually shift that within one or two meetings. Sometimes I've even had people at workshops that I teach and speak at. I do exercises with them, possibly maybe writing a list of what you feel you should be doing, what you feel you believe about yourself, and then we go through a shift of that and kind of just analyzing it and figuring it out and going, oh my gosh, that was the problem.
So most of us work on problems that we don't have as opposed to the ones that we do have. And what I'm hearing you say with the tips, the tools, the techniques, that it allows a person to actually see what the real problem is. And if I can see what the real problem is, I can get a handle on it and work on it. Because if I don't know what it is, no matter what I do, I'm going to end up at square one.
Exactly. And sometimes people use it as an excuse not to move forward. They'll just stay stuck in that belief because they're scared of moving forward. Fear of failure, fear of uncertainty. And so making them realize that they can do it. And sometimes it even works with stories, telling them success stories of others, you know, who have achieved amazing things.
By the way, when we talk about people who achieve amazing things, what about people who are just like they are that achieved, you know, a level in life that they didn't think they could achieve? I found over the years, when you talk about, you know, I'm sitting there and I have a particular problem. But if you talk about somebody who is this phenomenal person, they're making multi-billion dollars and they did this and they came out of it. For most people, that's so hard to grasp, to get their arms around. It's that story about somebody just like me who was having the same problems that I was having, and that I could see through them that I can end up doing it. I've seen so many people set themselves up for failure because they're trying to model after somebody, a Steve Jobs, and not everybody's going to be a Steve Jobs.
Exactly. You need to try to find what your strengths are and, you know, take that inspiration from whoever you can get it from, of course. I mean, I do Willow Tree Women's Circle in Orange County in LA, and I specialize in having speakers like that have had really horrific, you know, turmoil happen in their lives, and they've overcome it and become amazing and successful. And that inspires so many people because they say, wow, my life's not even at that low level. I could do this too.
Okay, are you on Skype?
Yes, and it's acting up. It's very windy here. I apologize.
That's okay.
Real high, real low.
So let's see how this goes, because we may have you back on. Because it's going way up and down and backwards and forwards. But the one thing that, and we're almost out of time now anyways, but the one thing that I've always felt politically, that if I had my choice, I would have John Wayne as the president. The one thing that you got, the one thing that you got going is where you are in Orange County, you got the John Wayne Airport. So you got me.
All right. That's awesome.
Which is good. Okay. We're about out of time. Let me ask you this. Kim, do you have a website we can find you at and find the book and find out what you're doing, where you're doing, and sign up?
Yes. My website is kimlifecoach.com. And you can find out more about my book, my CD, and my workshops there.
Wonderful. Kim, thank you so much for being with us. It was an experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love what you're doing, by the way. You're spot on with everything that you're saying. When you hear the show, it goes up and down, but we got the point across.
Thank you so much, and I apologize for the...
Oh, that's okay. All right, take care. Good night.
All right, have a good one.
You too.
Off comes the makeup. Off comes the clown's disguise. The curtain's fallen. The music softly dies. But I hope you're smiling.
I'm Michael Ray Dresser.
And I'm Radio Susie.
And that, my friends, is a wrap.
As they say in this biz, that's all there is. There isn't any more. We've shared a moment. And as the moment ends.